You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Where did you find out that?
I read the abstract.
It's implausible deniability.
That's very jaunty, isn't it?
Are you there, Stella?
I am here, Morena Karen. How are you going?
Welcome to the Saturday Spring.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And your implausible deniability slot's all on science.
It is. It's a way for me to exercise my insufferable passion for science.
Do you? Have you studied it?
I have. I've just finished my degree in biological sciences, psychology and politics.
Oh, congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much.
Where does this lead you to?
Hopefully science communication. So I'm stoked to be here.
what about other jobs in terms of, you know?
Look, I'd always wanted to be a policy analyst, but we see the state of policy analysts right now, so that's on hold.
Okay,
it's on hold for now.
You're having a hiatus.
Yeah, having a media break.
All right. No, you're not at the moment. You're actually right in the thick of it.
It's true. It's true.
Okay. AI's impact on the environment. When I saw the topic that you were going to do today, I thought, is there one? Because you know, it's artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
What's left behind?
That's exactly what I was thinking about. I overheard someone on the bus have a bit of a yarn about AI and how it's everywhere. And in that kind of eavesdropping, I did hear them chatting about how tech was going to solve our climate crisis by kind of coming up with ideas for us, generating things that we could do. And I have no idea if they were kidding or not, but I was certainly kind of galvanized by that, at least to have a gaze. So I guess we'll start by looking at one paper that kept kind of coming up when I was looking at researching this, which is from MIT, from Struble, Ganesh and McKellum. That was from 2019, which is actually quite old in the science scheme of things. But
from who? Struble, Ganesh and Callum.
You know those guys.
Sounds like a law firm from hell.
A little bit. So they did a life cycle assessment of the resource that's needed to train three really commonly used AIs, because there's all sorts of different ones that achieve different outcomes. So they obviously won't have kind of uniform footprints because they have different levels of things going on.
Hang on. I'm just going to just backpedal for a bit.
Yeah.
They did a what?
They did a life cycle assessment.
A life cycle assessment. Okay.
Yeah.
On three different AIs.
Yeah.
Three different artificial intelligences.
Yes. Zzzz.
Okay.
Yeah, indeed.
Right. We're with you.
So AI is built at least in part off the principle of training, of kind of repeating things. And that's a big energy draw. So that's the most logical kind of conclusion. There's lots of power being used. We know that logically, but they kind of quantified it with a few common carbon benchmarks for people to kind of compare it, you know, if you're thinking about it. So we'll start with the carbon dioxide footprint overall. So that's over 284,000 kilograms equivalent. And that's a really big number. But they kind of compare that, to put it in context for you, to the life cycle of a standard American car, from manufacture to each time you fill it up to the time that it eventually kind of craps out. And it found that training one natural language processing model is 5 times the lifetime emissions of an American car.
Gee, and how long does this training go on for?
Well, the training, I mean, it's a different time period for each model. They didn't say how long it takes, but it definitely, you know, that's okay.
Just turn your mic off.
Look, it gets boring sometimes.
No, it wasn't. Nothing to do with you.
But kind of what's jarring about all of that is the fact that those figures are just compared to training that model once, literally one time. And the researchers were kind of at pains to let us know that the training phase of an AI is sort of the baseline of how much work one of those models does. So that's the lower range of energy use, and it's extortionate. It's huge amounts of energy being trained for once. So yeah, that was very jarring to me. And
I'm trying to imagine who does the training, how that actually works.
I think they let
Would you like a cup of coffee before we start?
Are you feeling good? Yeah, cool. So that's one kind of example of how much emissions is. And there was a story in the BBC just 3 days ago that was about Google's 2024 environmental report, which is, I'm sure you can imagine, quite grim. The company reported a 48% increase in greenhouse gas emissions for 2023 over 2019. And Google actually cited AI here as one of the reasons for that. So that was quite fascinating. And for me, at least in this whole conversation, as you said at the top, I wasn't really thinking about the physicality of AI. We kind of think about it in terms of it's on our computer, that's it's just doing its own thing over there. But
Whatever its name is,
look, I wouldn't know. what machines are running them and kind of where they are, who's doing that upkeep, all of that kind of thing.
Where does that all happen? Well, somewhere.
It's in data centers. And so data centers are exactly what they sound like. They're collections of computer servers, sometimes warehouses full of them. And they're all working all the time to store that information that we're constantly accruing. You know, every time you get asked for your email, every time you're being a data point in society, it's getting stored somewhere. And we have 56 data centers in Aotearoa right now. And
really?
Yeah, and we're on the way to more.
Where are they?
I believe from memory there was 28 in Auckland,
a warehouse, a bank of computers.
A bank of computers. That's exactly right. So that's an enormous amount of machines, just things doing things all the time.
That's incredible, just for New Zealand.
Yeah.
So for the rest of the world,
phenomenal amounts. And what's crazy about that huge amount of information is that we're not actually even using that information most of the time. And so this isn't an AI issue, but it kind of relates to AI. There's a sinister sounding dark data, which refers to data collected by companies or organizations that's just used either once or not at all. So that's just sitting there, and it takes energy to store that data. And on average, 65% of stored data within one organization is quote unquote dark. It's not being used at all, but it takes energy to store that. So dark data, as I said, isn't really an AI problem, but they're linked in the sense that we have this kind of hoarding problem of data. We're just always, always collecting it. Storing data takes energy, and AI fundamentally depends on access to like enormous amounts of data to train on. So we're in a kind of catch-22 there, if you're looking at it from a climate perspective. And I thought an interesting example of that kind of catch-22 and what the people on the bus were talking about, that kind of, oh, is it going to save us? Are we going to come up with new ideas?
A long bus ride?
It was a long bus ride. You really wouldn't believe it. AT, look, there's lots of delays.
Yeah, there are. That's true. When's that bus coming?
Right. Truly.
I nearly caught a bus this morning, but I think I couldn't risk it.
it's a risk. But sometimes you get these combos. But an example of that is how some researchers are trying to mitigate contrails. And contrails are those white tracks that airplanes leave in the sky. Mm. And they
aren't
have...
they chemtrails?
I think there's different words for them. And I don't know the distinction. I should have looked that up. But I really don't know.
Well, I could be wrong. you're the expert. Not me.
And so contrails are a huge problem for our emissions. IPCC 2022 reported them as being about 35% of aviation's impact on global warming. So Google Research, American Airlines and Breakthrough Energy have collated huge amounts, again, of flight data. So that's, again, we're storing huge amounts of data.
What about Google? They must have a gazillion warehouses.
Yeah, best not to dwell. They're working on an algorithm to try and create routes for pilots that avoid contrails. So that sounds great, but if we're talking about it in the context of this AI discussion, again, we're just collecting data, training data on models, but both of those exercises have huge emissions. So, look, I don't have the answer, I just have the facts, but that sounds really grim to me. I guess to kind of conclude that conversation, there's a phenomenal amount of components to the kind of story about AI's environmental impact. And as the case, I suppose, related to Castor's conversation, as the case with tales of climate crisis under capitalism, the answer is blurry. There's so many moving parts. It's really hard to get exact numbers from companies about where we got materials, how we got materials, and then it's also hard to know who's running models where, to what extent they're using those models, how many get abandoned, are we training one up and then it doesn't work and we've just wasted a bunch of energy on doing that? It's really undocumented, but there are examples of quantified things like that first study. So I guess in summary, the things that go into AI and the things that go into data storage are obviously electricity, that's that initial power needed to train and model, and then the continuous use of electricity if that model works and we want to use it over and over and over. And then there's that the cooling of machines is actually a really interesting part. We need huge amounts of water to cool those machines down and, you know, keep them air conditioned, because computers, I don't know if you've ever played The Sims on your laptop, but it sounds like it's about to take off. And the sheer amount of machines needed to store that data is phenomenal. And also a side note, I guess, is the lithium in those machines, the sourcing of the machine itself, all of the plastic, all of the metal, all of the things that create a computer, that's a consideration, and it's really hard to quantify where that's coming from, all of those kind of things. So AI is really more physical than it seems, and it's really only growing. I mean, the industry and the sector is projected to grow huge amounts. I could only find kind of economic takes on how much it's going to grow, because it's all connected with Elon Musk, all of that kind of shenanigan. Yeah, look, he came up a lot and I just chose to ignore it. And I guess, really, truly, I'm not really sure if the people on the bus were kidding, but I don't know if AI's generation of any ideas that could outweigh that enormous environmental burden, I don't know if it will outweigh that. And that's my sad little conclusion, I guess. There's really no happy answer. Sorry to add to the climate anxiety.
Yeah, be afraid. It's not what we want to hear on a Saturday morning.
No, look, I really should have chosen a more upbeat topic.
Hasn't Elon Musk got a kid called X?
Hey, oh, is it X? I never know how to pronounce it. Funny characters and look. He's got a copious amount of children as well. I don't know what he's doing.
Well, just taking the subject off our anxiety, existential anxiety.
Thank
you, Stella. That's a great start for implausible deniability. That'll give us something to talk about.
Indeed.
If we ever get invited to dinner, that is. So you'll be back next Saturday.
I will.
And you've chosen a song for us.
Yeah, it's Yoshime Battles the Pink Robots from The Flaming Rips.
Nga mihi. Thank you very much, Stella.
Thank you.
And now you know. That was Implausible Deniability.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.